Capitan America che dà la palla, si chiude il triangolo fra lui e Giroud, ed è Christian Pulisic che segna un meraviglioso 2-0 USA.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgrood.
What's up guys, glad to be back. We got Madison as well.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks in a row, so doing good here.
Has it? Were you here last week?
I was here last week, wasn't I?
Mm-hmm. You were on the bonus. I don't know if you're on the main episode.
I think he was.
I think I was. Okay. I'll
there's a lot, man.
Someone will call me out in the comments for not being there, so it's cool.
Yeah, honestly, it is easy to lose track at the moment. Things are coming thick and fast. We've got a lot to cover in every episode, and today's going to be one of those days as well. We've got four games to talk about, two recaps, two previews. The two recaps obviously being Newcastle in the Champions League and Hellas Verona in Serie A. And then we've got two Serie A games to preview, those being Cagliari tomorrow night. We're recording this on Tuesday. And then we play Lazio on Saturday evening. So, yeah, we're in the middle of a stretch of seven games in 22 days. We're going to try and do our best to do justice to each of these games. Some of them, there's going to be lots of goals to talk about. Others, like today, we've got one goal to talk about. So, we'll take it as it comes. Hectic time of the season up until the break at the end of October, but we're here and we're going to fire through it. Apologies that it's a day late. I've been in Berlin over the weekend, which also means that I missed the Hellas Verona game. My girlfriend was running the Berlin Marathon. She finished it, so congratulations to her. And that also meant I got to go and watch Union Berlin at the same time as the Verona game, and they lost 2-0. So all this stuff about Union Berlin being a Champions League team and having Bonucci and Robin Gosens and stuff like that. Crap, they were awful. So maybe I was a curse. I don't know. But enough of that. Before we dive into this week's episode, we've got to say thank you, as always, to our loyal Substack founding members, Des Wins and McGlynn, Ali Tarin, Tito Mack, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kemin and MJ. Thank you for the support that you've given us. We have a lot of exciting stuff coming out on the bonus. Isaac's really ramping up the ideas on that front. We've got, I think, three new series in the pipeline for that. And then the bonus podcast later this week, what we're planning on doing is a recap on how the Primavera have been doing this season, because a lot of people are interested in that. They are currently 6-0 up after 56 minutes at the time that we're recording this in a cup game. So we're going to be talking Kamada, all the other players that have impressed. So tune in for that one later in the week. And we begin by recapping our first Champions League group stage game. So, boys, I've just rambled for 2 minutes 46 seconds. Apologies for that, but got to get all the admin out of the way early doors. Milan, Champions League, back in action. First group stage game. People were saying that this was the most winnable game of our entire group on paper. Newcastle at home. Obviously, we've got PSG and Dortmund in our group. I personally think Dortmund's probably the more winnable game, but I still picked this game to be a draw in the pre-match prediction, and that is the way that it played out. Newcastle came into the game having won 1 out of 5 in all comps, and they came and looked like a team low on confidence that were going to sit there and frustrate us. We didn't manage to score, but I think we looked pretty good, especially in the first half.
Yeah, I'd say us not scoring just tells you how wasteful we were. Mm-hmm. I think the stats said we had like 26 shots, and I don't think they even had one in the first half. They had a few in the second half, but it was like the typical game of FIFA, where one side is just completely dominating but can't get it in, and you just started to feel like, oh no, maybe they're going to get some cheesy ass late goal. But luckily they didn't, and it was still 0-0. Quite a few opportunities that we should have put away. Obviously the one that everyone's talking about is the Liao backheel that he kind of whiffed. I don't necessarily hate that he went for the back heel given where he was in that moment. However, I do think he should have shot earlier. He cut in a few more times when I don't think he needed to. Obviously, I'm not the guy to be critiquing one of the best wingers in the world today. So, I'll let it slide. But yeah, there was a few missed opportunities. We could have done better. But overall, look, this is the team that was top four and supposedly the best league in the world. And They looked like dog shit. We dominated them start to finish. Yeah, we didn't get the win, and we might regret that later on, but we were clearly the better side.
Yeah, I think we were just looking for that perfect goal, right? Like that perfect picturesque goal instead of just like a tap-in, which we would have settled for last year. And the players just have to like be cognizant, like we need the 3 points. It doesn't matter how we get the 3 points, but that's most important.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely it had to be substance over style in this game. This and Dortmund, as mentioned, are two of the more accessible games in the group on paper. Like, I think you might be looking at needing 10 points, 9 or 10 points to progress from this group. And I understand the fans that are saying this had to be three of them. You know, Newcastle hadn't made a good start to the season. We'd obviously just lost in the derby, but we tend to respond well after such significant setbacks. And to be honest, the performance was there. We generated chance after chance. In particular, in that first half, I think we had 15 shots around about that. You had the Liao effort, which AJ mentioned. I think he took it maybe one touch too far, but the bottom line is he got deep into the box and he was on his favoured right foot. So you'd back him to find the angle to either put it in near side or far side. If it gets heroically blocked, fair enough. You give credit to the defender to try the back heel. There's a really, really good photo from Getty Images. It's somewhere on the website if you search it for Liao articles. But it shows exactly what Liao saw in that moment. And that was that it was crowded towards the side where he would have taken the shot on his right foot. But there was a massive space to the left side. So he's thinking, if I can just get a bit of power on this back heel, it's going far side into an empty net. So I can see why he tried it. The comparisons to Balotelli and that thing that he did in pre-season for Man City, it's so lazy and it just feeds into this Italian media narrative that they love to either pile on or overpraise us, and that applies to individual players as well. It was, yeah, as I say, it was just lazy and I hated seeing the papers saying, are you going to be Mbappe or are you going to be Balotelli? Like, come on, man. Like, he's doing enough. He's proving himself time and time again to be a top-level player. He made one bad decision. He'll make three right decisions now. You know, he's scored 3 goals in 3 league games, which will come on to with the Verona game.
And let's not pretend like Mbappe's never made a bad decision, missed an easy goal before. You know, like, the best players on the planet can miss a goal. Like, it is what it is. And then you look at Balotelli on the other end of it too. Like, he scored some incredible goals. So I don't know. It's like you said, it's just lazy. One was a preseason one where he was 1-on-1 and decided to do some cheeky dumb shit and he missed. And then this was, you know, in the area, crowded, quadruple defended. You saw an opening, you went for it, you missed. Big difference. Big difference.
Big difference.
But yeah, they get paid to not do that.
Yeah,
they get paid to score goals, and it's up to them to decide how best to score a goal. I think if Liao had that chance back, if he could repeat it, he wouldn't do the same thing again. But in that moment, he thought that was the best way to score a goal. It's not like we were. I'd almost be more annoyed if you saw it 3-0 up. Sorry, because then you know that he's showboating. Then you know he's doing it to get a rise, you know, and to try and get on the highlight reels. Yeah. But there, I think he genuinely thought, I can sneak this through the gap. Again, I think if he had it back, he'd probably just try a normal shot and hope that it goes in. But there were other chances too. You know, there were other opportunities to score. There was the Teo run and the Giroud near post flick that went into the side netting. He really should have hit the target there. He got too good a connection on it. From that Liao chance, Pobega had a shot cleared off the line by Jacob Murphy, of all players, winger back there doing defending on the line. Teo had a header from a corner that Nick Pope saved. Nick Pope made a couple of other saves, including one from a Krunic shot from distance, and then there might have been another Pobega shot from distance. Basically, it was a barrage, and we met an inspired goalkeeper, and we also had
every shot hit directly at him.
There was that, yeah. He flapped at a couple of them, but he made a couple of decent saves on sighted as well.
But still, I mean, like, I'm looking at the stats on FotMob, and Nick Pope made 8 saves. Like, whether they're right at him or not, that's still a lot of pressure to be under. You know, and then the XG, take this how you want, but we had 1.99, so basically 2, and they had 0.28. Like, it's very clear who was well and above the better side here. It's just one of those days where you don't get it in. And then, of course, you know, Maignan also goes down hurt at the end there. So at that point, it's like, well, let's just...
He was under a lot of stress all game, you know?
Yeah, it's just
one of those weird things, man.
I thought he cramped up due to inactivity. Like, RLC, when he went down, I thought, oh, we're in trouble here because he's got an injury history. particularly with his lower leg, and he went down with his calf, and I thought, oh, that's it. We've overworked him. Out of all the players you could have rested, it maybe should have been him. You should have brought Musa on sooner, whatever. And then, thankfully, it was just cramp. Saw him mouthing to the physio, it's just cramp, it's just cramp. Went off as a precaution. He was being changed anyway, apparently. And then, as you say with Maignan, he goes down, absolutely nowhere near the ball. So then you know that that's a problem. Again, it could have been cramp, but not with the level that he worked. And instantly requested to be subbed. But actually, Sportiello came on and filled me with a bit of faith because he made a really good save.
He made the best save of the game.
From Longstaff, yeah. And it was one of those where when it happened in real time, I said out loud, I was going over anyway, didn't need to do that. But then you look at it from the angle behind, it was dipping under the crossbar, so he needed to reach and strong hand that away. So fair play to him for keeping the clean sheet. And I mean, it's tough to take when you create 25 chances, you have 9 shots on target, you've been clearly the better side. It almost feels like one of those like Torino at home type games where you've, not from this season, but previous seasons, where you dominate, you do everything but find the net. But I think a bit of context is needed. You look at Newcastle, as AJ mentioned, they finished top four in potentially the toughest league in the world last season. They've got an exciting project. They're spending 70 million on players to sign one of our best players. They beat Sheffield United 8-0 this weekend. Sheffield United are not good, but to beat any team in any league 8-0 is something we haven't done for a long, long time. So I think it just shows that they actually are a bit of a threat. And to pen them in as much as we did for 60, 70 minutes of the game overall, I think we can be a bit proud. It was a good response after the derby, which was needed.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying there about they ain't no win at the weekend. That's the equivalent of Roma putting 7 past Empoli, and then we smoked them, and then Inter, who smoked us, only put 1 past Empoli. So I don't think it directly maths up, you know, but I do understand that point. Like, they do have threats and can score goals, but they couldn't do it against us, which is what matters, and I don't think they will. You know, they might pick up a little bit of steam in the return leg when it's do or die, because I think it'll be the final group stage game. So in the event that the second position is still up for grabs, like, you know, that'll be a lot tougher game. I almost wish, well, obviously I wish we scored in this one and won it, but you know, it'll be nice if we could wrap it up before that, you know, if they can continue to drop points. Cause I believe we'll play PSG back to back, correct? Or do we play Dortmund back to back? Okay.
No, it's PSG back to back.
Dortmund's next week.
So, I mean, that's where it might get a little cagey for us, you know, just seeing how the table falls. But, yeah, overall, I'm not too worried about Newcastle going forward. I think they showed us what they can do, and it wasn't a whole lot. I think maybe they just crumbled under the lights. Obviously, it was their first Champions League game in over 20 years. The atmosphere at San Siro for a Champions League night compared to any atmosphere in the Premier League is night and day different. So, you know, that's just quite literally something that none of those players, bar Tonali, have experienced before. And Tonali's not going to go out of his way to score against Milan. So I'm not saying he did through the game, but
he went out of his way to give us the ball back every single. I saw that no player in the entire round in Champions League gave the ball up. No midfielder, sorry, gave the ball away more than Tonali. 5 times he lost possession.
Yeah, him and Loftus Cheek, man, they were battling. They were going at it. It was almost like Ruben wanted to be like, yo, you're gone, and I took your number, and here's why.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah. This is my spot.
While we're on the subject of RLC, I mean, we might as well talk about a couple of the players who did well. And I thought he had an unsung good performance, RLC, because I think he was told to limit how much Bruno Guimaraes was able to influence the game. Like, he's one of the best holding midfielders in the world. And if he'd have managed to get hold of the ball, we wouldn't have been as dominant as that, and there'd have been a lot more threat at the other end. RLC did a really good job shadowing him. But then also, every time he went into battle with Tonali, he pretty much won, or at least he put enough pressure on him to give the ball away. So it was almost like he had two players at once. And then that freed Krunic up to actually have, I thought, one of his better games. And it's a shame that he's been injured now, and we'll come on to that. But the midfield, certainly after such a battering in the derby, more than held its own. And, you know, I guess Chukwueze had his moments, but it probably wasn't the kind of first start that you would want for him. You probably want him to have gone in for a game
Did he start? I thought Pulisic started. No, you're right.
It was Chuck.
Yeah, it was Chuck.
Chuck
on the right weekend.
Yeah, I think he did really good.
I mean, I thought his crossing was great. His crossing was well and above, better than Pulisic, but overall, I didn't think he was that effective.
I think people got the wrong idea.
Some chances on net as well.
Yeah,
and like those, I was kind of like, I wish Pulisic was in there for those because he would have done something a little bit differently. But I mean, the first half, like he was part of almost every attack.
Yeah.
I mean, I think big plus is it's not Masiya Salamakers, you know, like which everyone we have on is going to give us a lot more quality. So,
yeah. Yeah. Definitely. It's not, it's a nice problem to have to be able to rotate those two in and out. And I think, again, we'll come on to the two games to come, but the starting lineup that was supposed to be fielding against Cagliari is going to give us some big indications in terms of what the new signings, particularly the forwards, can give to us. The other key takeaway, I think, is that the centre-back pairing, probably the back four, you could go so far as to say, looked a lot better. That was one of Tomori's best games for us in the Champions League, I think. He got back to the levels of the knockout stages of last season and sort of towards the Scudetto winning season levels, but even Chiao also looked really good because Alexander Isaac is a real ball ache to mark because he's not just big and physical, he's fast, he's really good at hold up play, but he can sprint in behind you. You know, he's a multi threat centre forward, and I think they did a good job shutting him down. So,
yeah, Tomori, for all his faults, you know, one thing that we tend to criticize a lot is his passing and distribution, like he just tends to give balls away, but. He completed every single pass this game, including long balls, you know, not just the little ones back to Chow or Teo that really stack up the numbers that padded, but he had a lot of long balls and he completed every single one of them. You know, he only lost one duel the whole game. So Tomori might actually get my man of the match. I was leaning Krunic, but now that I reiterate things, I'm starting to think Tomori maybe. I know they gave it to Liao like in real life, but even he didn't want it.
Yeah, he said he didn't want to accept it.
I missed the derby. I have to come back with like fucking vengeance, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also said
the English team that he didn't like fucking fall apart against, you know.
Well, Spurs. He did well against Spurs, to be fair. But yeah, you're right.
I feel like the Spurs matchup was very boring.
Yeah, like it was Kane and nobody for them last season, you know. He did well. Chow had to come back with the performance of character as well after he got bullied in the derby. Of course, it doesn't erase what happened in the derby because that was an embarrassing performance, and defensively we left so much to be desired, but it was a step forward that was then followed by another step forward. We'll do tops and flops. Top, I'm taking Tomori. So, AJ, if you want to join me, you can on Tomori.
Yeah, I'll hop on the Tomori train.
Go for a hat trick.
Yeah, I think it's right because Tomori gets a lot of criticism when things go badly, but I find that the praise isn't, it doesn't stack up in quite the same way when he has a really good game, and maybe it's because we didn't win. But I think for a lot of people, he was one of the standout performers. Flop of the match for me, I think it might be trendy to go with Liao because of that spurned chance and how it was spurned, but I'm going to go with Giroud. He was coming up against Shah and Botman, who are two good centre-backs at what they're good at. But you've got to ask different questions than what Giroud can, because they're both very happy to wait for balls to come into the box and deal with them. Neither of them are particularly rapid, but they're built for the physical battle. And to have Giroud as a lone centre-forward, maybe he was on a hiding to nothing from the first minute, but he got that one moment, and that was when he beat his man, Shah, I believe it was, to the near post, to that Teo cross. That has to be a goal. He got good enough contact on it, but put it in the side netting. And if that goes in, we're looking at a totally different game. You're a centre forward that's in it in the Champions League. You've scored goals in the Champions League. You're there for the duels, and you've got to take that moment. So I'm going to say Giroud because he didn't do a lot else apart from that.
I mean, that's a compelling argument. I mean, you're slaying
me. It was more of a rant.
I'll be honest. I was going to picture Giroud as my flop for Verona, so I wasn't going to attack him for this one, but. It might be the case. Originally, I was thinking Calabria just because he had a bad game and then went down injured. And I think Florenzi did a lot better after coming on, even in the Verona game, which is just a weird lineup, but we'll get to that. So, yeah, I think I am going to go Giroud as well. We'll double up on that also.
We'll go for a part of a hat trick. I'm going to go all three attackers to have as many chances that we had and not put a single one away, the three of you just flop. So,
yeah, I think that's fair. And yeah, a point on the board. We'll wait and see what comes from the Dortmund and PSG away games, which I think could end up being decisive in the group. But yeah, until then, back to league action. So from Champions League back to Serie A action, we had Hellas Verona in the league. They had a pretty decent start to the season, to be honest. They won their first two games. And that coming after they, of course, only avoided relegation last season via a playoff. But they have dropped off a bit since then. One draw and two defeats since the most recent defeat coming against us. Now, I'm going to have to kind of hand over the reins for this because, as mentioned at the start, I didn't see the game. It directly clashed with the Union Berlin game in the end, especially because of the delay due to the biblical downpour that happened at San Siro. I genuinely thought, looking at the pictures on my phone, I thought, this is going to be called off full stop, let alone delayed. Like, that was some mad rain.
I did not see any of the photos of the rain. I was like, oh, apparently there's a delay. So
then there's a it was nasty.
How long it was going to be.
Yeah, it was a nasty downpour. The game was a half hour delayed, which, you know, isn't terribly long, but it was because they had to drain the pitch and then inspect it and then drain it again. And, you know, you're watching, I forget who the referee was. Was it Maresca or something like that? But it was the referee Liao and whomever the Verona captain was were walking around. They were bouncing the ball and saying, like, nah or yes. And there were a few good spots. And then most in the middle, it was pretty waterlogged. And you saw that during the game. I think Pulisic slipped and fell like six times. Loftus Cheek fell. Krunic fell. Someone else did too. I can't remember who it was. But people were falling everywhere. Yeah, Musa fell as well. Musa had a great game after he came on. He almost scored. I really thought he was going to. But this game was a lot harder than the Newcastle one. And we won this game. That's the funny thing. Because
Leao obviously... It's a hard game, though.
No.
Verona's I feel like they always like put us to the test.
This is the first game in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... In six games that we didn't score at least two goals on them.
Okay, no. But... besides the last game, 3-2, 2-2.
Yeah, there was only one difficult one, and that was the Scudetto winner, where we were down 2-0, and then Samuel came on, and we ended up winning it 3-2 in the end.
Incredible.
Great time.
The lineup was kind of wild, to be fair.
It was very lucky.
It was a 3-4-3, but not. Like, it was just the weirdest thing ever. I don't know who wants to explain that, but do you want me to...
I'm on the trip, and I'm only checking my phone periodically to see what the latest stuff is with lineup. But I was surprised about the sheer amount that stuff was changing. You know, because we're updating the graphics guy and stuff to be like, no, this is what's going to happen. And then like by Friday night, it turns out he's thinking about doing a 3-4-3 and playing Musa as a wing back. And I'm like, how strong is this German beer? That doesn't seem right at all, man. And then it sort of became apparent that the reason for the selection choices was that we didn't have either of our normal starting fullbacks available. Teo and Calabria were both suffering with fatigue, muscle fatigue, whatever. Didn't want to risk them, and so played Florenzi, who is a more natural wing back anyway, to be fair to him. And obviously, we didn't sign a left back in the summer. So rather than say throw Bartzaghi out there, he chose to just divert Florenzi over to the left side and play him as a kind of wing back to limit the amount that he has to defend on his weaker side. I can kind of understand the rationale behind the lineup. It's just not something that we ever saw as a possibility for us, even coming out of pre-season. We tried a few different systems and none of them were like that, you know, three-man defense and still a double pivot in midfield. And playing with the front three of Pulisic, Giroud and Liao. Thankfully, when the game did kick off, just as Union Berlin were going 1-0 down, I checked my phone and Milan were 1-0 up, goal from Rafael Leao. It comes from pressure up the field, which is good. It shows that we still got that high pressing capability. The Verona player dawdles in possession, loses the ball. Giroud kind of inadvertently almost stabs it through, and Leao, when he gets in that situation, he
Pulisic wins it back, by the way. Pulisic was the one who put the pressure and caused the interception. Yeah. Pass it to Giroud, who got the assist, so... essentially won this game because of Christian Pulisic. Just want to throw that out there because everyone said he had a horrible game, and that's just simply not true. He essentially won the game. Yeah, it was all over because he slipped and fell, and you know he's an American.
Because he's American, yeah.
Yeah. But not going to happen here because this is my podcast. So you can talk shit in the comments, and I'll be here next week anyways. Actually, no, I won't. Next week, I won't be here. Week after, though, I'll be back. Don't you worry.
Where are you going to be next week?
Yeah.
My sister's wedding. Or maybe it's the week.
Not a film. I think there's a film called My Sister's Wedding.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Sports Yellow had his debut, and he looked incredible. He had a great game. No one else agrees with that? Okay.
Well, no, sorry. He made saves, and I was like, would Mignon have made that look as difficult, you know? But
there was that one header that he kind of had to flap away. Again, right. I was like, he's making
these look like phenomenal saves. I don't know if they are or they're just phenomenal for him, right?
Yeah, if he just like kind of embellished the form on it.
Right. But
there were a few that looked nice.
I was a little worried at the beginning of the game, and afterwards I was like, all right, maybe this guy can hang a little bit. So
yeah.
It's a backup that is semi-decent.
Towards the end of the game, I was thinking, okay, this is garbage time. Like, is this when Sports Yellow shows why he's the backup? And to his credit, he didn't. You know, I thought he looked great the whole time. I thought Florenzi looked great the whole time, which is funny because he's a right back playing, you know, left mid, left wing back. And then you got a center mid and Musa playing right wing back. And yeah, there was just a lot of weird stuff going on there. But overall, I thought it looked good. Bartezaghi did come on late. He didn't really have much of an impact, but he also wasn't tested a whole lot. I don't think he had much to do, but he looked fine, you know, for a 17-year-old making his debut in a sticky situation. I was happy with his performance. Musa obviously had that great run-in on goal and a nice shot that I thought went in at first. It did not. It was a good save. And then people started dropping again, right? Like, weren't more people getting injured as well or some?
Krunic going down.
That's right. Yeah, Krunic died. He'll be out a month.
That is actually potentially the biggest headline from the game, to be honest, because of what it now means. That was like the one position, maybe that and left back, where we only had one natural player off the roll. Mm-hmm. And we warned all summer about the potential for shit to hit the fan if Krunic either really struggled in that position or got a lengthy injury, and we're about to see what happens now, you know? We'll come on to the Cagliari game and what the lineup's looking like for substituting him. But yeah, I think you could tell when he went down. Again, I'm basing this off videos and photos, but you could tell something wasn't right when he went down. It was a problem with his thigh, flexor muscle, something like that. And whenever Milan released the official bulletin and it's like another check in 10 days, you know, it's a month out, basically. It's a grade two, I think. So he's going to miss not only 4 weeks, but potentially 7 games. And in among those 7 games, you've got Lazio, Napoli and Juve in the league, but you've also got, obviously, Dortmund and PSG in the Champions League. So it perhaps couldn't have come at a worse time, to be honest. But this is us now. Like, you've got to get used to it. How long are we on now? we ought to have a clock in the top corner. How long since injury?
Yeah.
It must be nearing 900 days now or something like that.
Oh,
but,
definitely.
That's a bad one because we know how much Krunic, for all the limitations we've pointed out week after week on this show, we know how important he is to Pioli. So when your head coach loses one of his most important pieces, it has me a little bit fearful about what's to come. But yeah, that's it. Really, I don't think there's an awful lot else to recap in terms of major events from the game.
No, in terms of major events, nothing really. They did have more shots than us, you know, so there's that. We definitely weren't like a brick wall like we were against Newcastle. Like, Verona did better against us than Newcastle did. But, I mean, as far as real threats, there wasn't a whole lot from them. Neither team had over one XG. Like, it was pretty mid for a game. But, yeah.
I'd like to put forward the notion as well, though, that for all people want us to win with style against lesser opponents, like Verona are, with respect to them. You've got to acknowledge the context of where we are in the season. You know, as mentioned, 7 games in 22 days. If you go a goal up early on, then you have earned the right to manage your energy levels a bit. You know, if you can win with minimal fuss and keep something in the tank for the tougher games that are to come, then we're all happy with that. You know, it's another win. It's 1-0. It's nothing glamorous, but it's a goal for Liao to keep him sort of on a confident streak. It's a clean sheet, so the defence are feeling a bit better about themselves as well. The Krunic injury is not ideal, but we now know that Maignan, Teo and potentially Calabria are looking okay, so it's not an absolute crisis. It's okay. It's just one of those early season wins. It doesn't always have to click.
I feel like with Maignan out, Teo out, Calabria out, keeping a clean sheet was a big morale boost, especially after getting thrashed in the Derby. It was kind of like, what is our defense like? Are they anything, you know? And so, and then also to keep a clean sheet against Newcastle, you know, like it's big. So,
yeah,
it was important.
I agree. To see. I think it does boost the confidence a ton, especially when you look at the rest of the results. You know, Napoli dropped points again. Yes. Juve lost. Yeah. Roma lost again. I think Lazio dropped points also, maybe. I'm not sure.
I think they drew 2-2, yeah.
Yeah. Inter was the only one who won, and that's fine. This is, I don't know how many years in a row or how many years total they've won their first five games, but they've never won the league when they've done that. So, you know, it's our year.
Well, it's been two years in a row, 3 years in a row.
Maybe it has.
They won the league four years ago.
No, but they didn't do it that year. But
right. So it can't be longer.
It's actually it's the first time since 2002-03 season that both Milan clubs have combined for 27 points out of 30. As in, you know, it's been 20 years since we both had this good a start to the season, and obviously the thing between us is the 3 points that they took off us. So, you know, is what it is. That's the direct correlation at the moment. But we've just got to keep pace with them. They've got a comparatively easier schedule between now and the end of October. We've got to keep racking up those wins in games like this. Doesn't matter how they come, really, at this point. Just keep the train moving. And you kind of mentioned AJ Batizaki coming on for his senior debut. I think a few people expected him to drop back down to the Primavera after spending pre-season with us, but to bring him on with 15 minutes left, a goal up in the game, it's not the easiest situation to come on. You've got to stay sharp and attentive and not be the guy that messes up the lead for us. But he did well, and he's apparently getting his first professional contract at some point soon, so it's been a good week for him. Top and flop, I'm going to have to say Leao for the top and surrender the flop. By virtue of not having watched the full game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's got to be Leao. He's the only one who really did anything.
Or a defender, if there was anyone who stood out, I guess.
You know, I'm going to give it to Sportiel just because it's probably not going to happen any other time this season. But he did make a few nice saves, and I really was comfortable with him. And that's something that typically doesn't happen. So Sportiel gets my top.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I have no idea who the flop would be.
Oh, I do.
Who?
Is Giroud.
He got the assist.
So? It doesn't matter.
You can't choose the guy who got the assist for...
I can, because there was a stat that popped up during the game on the screen for the Paramount, so it was probably on everyone's thing since they just steal a feed. He had like 94% of all his carries were one-touch carries. I mean, he's just doing those dumb fucking flicks. And every single one of those flicks was behind someone, and it's on a wet field. So if you're running forward, you get a ball past you that you don't expect is behind you. You turn around, you're falling, you're eating shit. He destroyed every single buildup. Giroud's the reason we only had one goal. I'm going to go that way. So yeah, fuck him.
There we go. Giroud getting absolutely. Honestly, I can sort of see why he started this game, knowing that he's going to be rested for the Cagliari game, which means that he's then going to come back for the games against Lazio and Dortmund. Like, I understand why that rest shift was scheduled that way, but you can really see he's on his ass at the moment. You know, he can't be starting every single game as he has been doing. But also, we know he sprained his ankle. We know he still has an Achilles problem from getting stamped or scraped, whatever, by Kim last season. Those take months. They are very sore. But he's playing on and he's plugging away. But you're already starting to see the media turn and say Milan's big regret from the summer was not signing a reputable and a Giroud deputy who offers certainties. Instead, we've sort of got the gamble of Jovic or Okafor, who plays the role completely differently. But yeah, that's Verona done. And next up, as I say, games coming thick and fast. We've got a midweek trip to Sardinia to face Cagliari, who got promoted back to Serie A after 1 year down there. Claudio Ranieri came in, I believe it was on New Year's Day, of this year. They sacked their previous head coach because they were really struggling in Serie B. They got them into the playoffs, fifth place, and then they beat Bari in the final to get promoted back to Serie A. They are not having a great time of things at the moment. They have scored one goal and they have lost three of their opening five games.
That's better than Empoli.
It is better than Empoli.
Their first win, right?
They are lucky, really, that Empoli exists, because otherwise, I think the narrative would be more about how bad Cagliari have been on their return. And they did spend a bit of money as well. I think they had a 5 mil signing, a couple of 4 mil signings, 3 2 mil signings, at least based on my research for the preview, which doesn't sound like a lot. It's maybe not enough to keep in the top flight, but a club that's had its uncertainty financially, they've put a bit of money into the squad to try and build depth. They just can't buy a goal. They've had one goal in five games, and that was in a 2-1 defeat. They lost to Atalanta most recently, 2-0, and CDK got an assist for them. He started well. Thanks, Martino, for pointing that one out. But yeah, he's doing well since he moved to Atalanta. I'm sure we'll speak more in depth about him in the coming weeks once he proves it's not just a flash in the pan. Yeah, Cagliari, no bueno. And they're playing a 3-5-2. That's one thing that does slightly worry me, but they're not quite as good at Inter at doing that.
Yeah, that's an understatement. They've beat us once in their last 22 attempts against us.
Jesus.
And we've won 17 of those. So,
that win was a 94th minute winner in like 2017, I want to say. Something like that.
Yeah.
It was a fucking nightmare game.
And they usually are in 2017 for us, you know, but
the whole team period, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think history's on their side, obviously, and we're a much better team now than we were in any of those previous games. The one thing that does worry me, though, is we are making a lot of big sorry, there's some weird commotion outside. We're making a lot of changes. You know, we're going back to a 4-3-3, still Sportiello in goal, still Florenzi. He's going to be playing right back, but then the rest of the back line is normal. Chow, Tomori, Teo. Midfield, Loftus-Cheek's back, Reinders is back, but Adley is supposedly starting in the defensive mid role, which, we'll see. This is his first start, I think, for Milan total, correct? Or does he
if
have
he
one?
Gets the start, it will be his.
So it would be his second start
is
for us.
Second start? Okay.
His only one came against Verona away last season, and he got yanked at halftime. He was playing.
Okay. I knew he had a couple half performances. I just couldn't remember if it was from the first whistle or not. But then Chukwueze and Pulisic are going to be starting together. Pulisic on the left now, Chukwueze on the right, with supposedly Okafor up top over Jovic, which is interesting. It's not a bad lineup. It's still a lot of our starters or first people off the bench. So we should be enough, but it does have question marks. You know, we haven't seen a whole lot of Okafor this season. And when we have seen him, it's been sometimes at left wing, sometimes a striker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen him when everyone else has changed, so we haven't got to see him with like from the first whistle yet. Chukwueze and Pulisic haven't played together yet, I don't think, or briefly. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Pulisic was moved centrally at one point, and Chukwueze came on. Overall, it's a change. It's unique, and this is the game you do the resting. You know, newly promoted side midweek, you got a bigger game against Lazio at the weekend. It makes sense. So, I'm not disappointed.
I worry about not having Liao, because I think it was last season or the season before, whenever he didn't play, we just looked awful because we only knew how to play through him, right? But I'm excited to see Okafor get a shot, Adley get a shot, supposedly. I wouldn't be surprised if Pioli said no, like an hour before the game.
As of 2 hours ago, it wasn't going to be him. It was going to be Reinders playing as a six, but it literally changed about 2 hours ago, just before we started.
That's why, like, I don't know what's at, you know, you never know. But I say of the attack, I'm excited to see Pulisic on the left, because like he's naturally a left winger. And Chukwueze's been playing good, so I'm excited to see him continuing to get some time.
I think, and I fully understand why it's worrisome not having Liao. Obviously, he's our best player by far. But I do think it might actually work out kind of in our favor, because all the preparation for a newly promoted side against Milan would probably be just make sure Liao doesn't get the ball. Well, Liao's not playing. So now they actually have to divide their already weaker defense. And they don't know how we're going to play with two different wingers than what we've been previously playing with. So it might actually work in our favor. You know, this isn't the formation going forward. Obviously, you want Liao in there, but for this specific game, it could potentially be a big one for us, you know? Might just work out.
And the thing about this as well, like I joked about Cagliari not playing a 3-5-2 as well as Inter do, I can see matchup-wise how having a more fluid front three could benefit us. They've got three centre-backs. It's going to be Vietska, Dossena, and Obert by the sounds of it. Not the most mobile. So hopefully we can play that front three close, make sure that Okafor's got someone close to him at all times, and not like we'd play with Giroud, who's expected to hold his own physically. You basically make it three of our forwards on three of their centre-backs. And then you're testing Nandez, who is a more natural central midfielder. He's expected to start at right wing-back. That's when you get Teo for the overloads down the left side, getting those deliveries in early and often. Obviously, Adli's going to need a bit of help in transition, probably. But they don't play with an attacking midfielder, so he should be afforded a bit more time playmaking. Then Reinders, all off the cheek, have got to push up and help with the attacks. And I expect us to dominate the game. I don't think Cagliari would be wise to come out all guns blazing and say this is going to be our first multi-goal game, this is going to be our first win of the season. So I expect them to try and sit deep and frustrate, probably playing a five or six at the back at times. And we have then firepower off the bench. That's something else worth mentioning. Being able to bring on Liao and Giroud is nice. But I don't expect an absolute walkover either, purely because of the way we saw the Verona game go. I don't think that we're in a mode of going hard for 90 minutes at the moment. We're managing workloads. I think if we get a one or two goal lead, ideally in the first half, we can maybe take foot off the gas, keep some energy for Lazio and Dortmund, and make wise substitutions, something Pioli doesn't always know how to do. I'd take another comfortable first gear win, you know?
Yeah. That's always ideal.
Bodies dropping.
I don't foresee Giroud coming on late unless we're 0-0 in like the 70th, you know?
I don't want to see Giroud at all.
No, me either. Like, but I can only see Pioli bringing him on in that situation.
A game off, right?
Yeah. It should be Jovic off the bench.
Break but him.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Predictions, I guess. Anything else?
I've put 2-1 in my preview. It'd just be funny if, you know, the second goal of the season that they got was against us. I don't know. I mean, it's Luvumbo's got their only goal for them. And they've got Petagna, who's going to play up front off him, I think, having signed from Monza on a loan deal, which allowed Colombo to go there. So Petagna potentially to score against us would be a headline, given he's ex-Milan. But yeah, I've gone 2-1.
3-0.
I wanted to say 3-0, but like, I don't think it is. I think it's going to be 1-0.
To Cagliari.
Yeah, twist. Right now. I think we'll get the win, but one of the front three will score.
I think Chukwueze and Okafor find the net. Honestly,
I was really hoping all three would. Like, I wanted to call that out, but I was like, that's too ballsy.
Yeah.
I'll be bold. I think Pulisic gets both of our goals. I think one of them might well be an absolute rocket as well. I think we're going to be restricted because of the way they play to some shots from distance, kind of like Bologna first game of the season and Torino as well. But if we can get some link-up going, wait for Pulisic to drift into those areas of space, one of them's going to be an arrow into the top corner. Let's move on then. Lazio at home, final game to talk about this episode. We don't have much to say about this one because we don't know what's going to happen in the Cagliari game and what the team news is in the build-up to this one. However, what we can probably say is that Maignan will be back in goal for this. Calabria should start at right back. Florenzi is expected to start against Cagliari and therefore Calabria won't be risked. And then it should be Ciao Tomori, should be Teo, who will have had a bit of rest. Krunic is going to still be out, so we'll see how Adli does. If he doesn't do well, we can maybe see Reinders moving back or maybe even Musa starting in that role. I'm not sure about that though. And then it'll be, you know, RLC, Reinders, Musa, one of those. Maybe Pobega comes in. It's all throwing shit at a wall at the moment, especially with the front three. I mean, we've no idea how that's going to go apart from probably Giroud and Liao are back in. And then the right winger will be whoever maybe does better tomorrow night. So that's about as much team news as we can give you. Let's pray for no injuries. Let's talk about Lazio. The Roman clubs have not had a good start to the season, it would be fair to say. Lazio, last season, finished second. It was always going to be tough for them to follow that up, let's be honest. Sarri's teams tend to peak for one season and then they drop off due to a variety of different things. They're really missing Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, as we thought they might do, as but one of the best midfielders in the league for over half a decade now. They made some signings in the summer. Signed Cancellieri from Verona. They paid a fee for him. Castellanos from New York City FC. Gustav Isaacson from Midtjylland, who Milan were following. Kamada on a free. So I think they tried to kind of make some moves to replace that productivity in the aggregate. They signed Ravella and Pellegrini on loan from Juventus and Guendouzi from Marseille with 12 mil obligation to buy, who, you know, he's been pretty good for Marseille, to be honest. And after a pre-season in which they racked up 16-0 win against some team, 5-0s, 4-0s, the season starts and they have one win out of five. And that win came against the champions, Napoli. Lazio are back to being batshit mental then, basically.
Yeah, Lazio suck. So that means we're just going to get our shit stuffed in, you know? Mm-hmm. No, I think we'll be fine. We're going to have our starters back. We should have Maignan back for this game, fingers crossed. Maybe even Calabria, but honestly, I'm fine with Florenzi. I think he's done a well enough job. So if he needs another rest, let him have it. Maybe Okafor does so well, he impresses so much that he gets another start, and Giroud says, hey, you know, let me have another night off. But obviously, Leao's going to be back. Whichever one of Pulisic and Chukwueze does the best against Cagliari is going to be starting, I would imagine, and probably Loftus-Cheek grinders. And then we don't know who's going to be the middle guy. You know, it could be Musa, could be Adli, depending on the performance. It's definitely not going to be Krunic, so that is still a big loss for us. But yeah, I don't know. I just, you're looking at it, 1-1 to Monza, 3-1 defeat to Juve, loss to Genoa. Like, you said, performance they've had was Napoli, and Napoli haven't been good under Rudy Garcia. So
they were good in that game, Lazio, to be fair to them. But I think that was a game that suited them as well. All the pressure on Napoli to prove that they're worthy champions, and that under Garcia they can maybe even take another step forward. But Lazio went there with a solid game plan, and it was a typical Sarri performance against the top side.
Immobile last season, even when they had Milinkovic-Savic, we fucking made it look like he was gone already when we played him second leg without Leao.
That was injured. A really comfortable win, like one of our most comfortable of the season.
Teo had a coast-to-coast, and it was a midday game. It was early, so, I mean, if we could pull it off then, like, we could do anything. So
it was in that stupid green shirt, though, I think.
It sure was, yeah. I was there for that.
Yeah, it was a nice shirt.
I like the shirt. I actually own it.
But, don't wear it at home. And that applies to the purple kit. I was going to say, we just did that this weekend. I like it, but don't, man.
We always debut our third shirt at home, though.
Yeah, whatever. It was all right with that one from the Scudetto season because that was also black and red. It was just mostly black. But to be wearing fucking purple at home, we are not Fiorentina, you know? But that's maybe me being a boomer or whatever my requisite generation is. Immobile scored twice for Lazio this season. He's normally on about six goals against bottom half teams by this point. So I think he's struggling with a lack of supply. Luis Alberto, joint top scorer with two goals as well. Keep an eye out for him because he's going to be operated in the area where Krunic would have been. Their joint second top scorer we need to watch out for is Provedel, who scored a 95th minute header in the Champions League to earn them a draw against Atletico Madrid. Fair folks. You know, that was just a brilliant moment.
Bento score against us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So never, you know,
he was on
don't
loan
laugh,
from
because
Juve,
it can happen.
Brignoli. Yeah. So I guess we can only predict. I like these kind of games at home because I don't think Lazio are a team that have a pack the bus mode. I think they've always got to try and play proactive football. And we saw last season in the home game, as mentioned, one of our most comfortable wins of the season. We got stuffed away from home, mind you. I think it was 4-0, was it?
Something like that, yeah.
It wasn't great. It was during the crisis. But I think with our first choice starting 11, hopefully refreshed Leao, Giroud, Teo, Calabria, we can get those mechanisms working, and we'll find a team that is not just going to sit deep and defend against us. And for that reason, I say it is a 3-1 win.
I mean, that'd be really nice. I think 2-1 is like the safest score prediction in the history of score predictions. So I'm going to take it. 2-1 to us.
I'm going to go 3-0 us.
There's that season where I think Spurs, obviously playing 19 away games in the Premier League, I think they won 12 of them and 8 of them were 2-1. Imagine having 8 2-1 away wins, you know? That'd be mental. Obviously,
that's the year that they went to the Champions League final.
Yeah, it was definitely around then. But the reason I remember is because on Skybet over here, you can do a thing where you submit, they pick 6 Premier League games per round and you have to predict the exact score. And depending how close you get a cash prize. And every single week, you just put Spurs 2-1 away win because it would almost always come in.
Speaking of betting and not football, but American football, I had a 9-game parlay this weekend. And I hit 8 of them. The 9th game, I had bet on the Saints to win. They were up 17-0 at the start of the 4th quarter, and they fucking lost.
How much would you have won?
It was a lot. I don't know the exact amount. Once you lose, DraftKings no longer shows you your payout, but it was a good amount. So, yeah.
Saw the Dolphins scored 70.
Had them in my parlay. That was an easy win.
Yeah. Anyway, moving away from hand egg. That's it. 3-1, 2-1, 3-0. Full house predicting a win, and let's hope we're right, because I do feel like Lazio are going to pick up at some point. I just hope that we're not the game where, you know, things click for them.
Champions League right after, so I doubt that this is the game where it starts picking up, you know.
I hope you're right. Let's move on and do some questions then. Had a good response to this. We got 11 replies. So I'll go through a few of them. Gregory Peck asks, purely trust, it is early days, but do you worry that players like Okafor and Co will not get enough minutes? Krunic is injured, Adley's been training as a 6, purely probably won't start him. Now the reports are that he will. I love Giroud, but we've become predictable up front. Why not try Okafor as a false 9? So there's a fair few points to go at there, but I think the bottom line is that Pioli is rigid. And he's not willing to try players in the same position that he did in preseason.
Yeah, I mean, well, now we have the predicted lineup for midweek, and, you know, all those players are starting. So if they perform, this is their opportunity. You know, if they flop, then of course Pioli's never going to try it again because he is rigid, he is stubborn, and he likes what he likes. But if they perform and make him undeniable, then you got to do what you got to do. Because like, we all know Giroud's old. We know he's predictable. We know he's not frail. He's actually in really good shape, especially for his age. But we know that at some point he's going to fall apart.
Right. You know?
But yeah, you know, if they perform, then maybe they could earn that. Everyone has the ability to earn their spot in training, and now they have that opportunity in a game, obviously midweek against a lower table side. But look, this is when you get your chance, you know?
Yeah, I think the problem with Giroud is he's very, like, one-dimensional. And if Okafor can show that he's dynamic and can, like, help, you know, get assists or be creative, like, that can also show that, like, he can come in off the bench, right, earlier in the game when we're struggling to get anything going. I would love to see Giroud get more bench time personally. But
the thing with Giroud is, like, he'll do these stupid flicks and 1 out of 15 will be an assist. But he'll try it every single time, and then those other 14 just lead to nothing, you know? Right. And it's like, that's the frustration. The one time it works, it's always a goal. He never does it in a bad spot. It just doesn't work often because it's not a very easy thing to do. And
he's an old-fashioned number 9. Like, that's just...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes!
Just like, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I think I'm going to get hit for this, but... All you can do is lay out the facts from what we've seen from Giroud, particularly in since the start of last season. But we know that he has at least a bit of chemistry with Leao. So that is important when you factor in how you're lining your team up. But as AJ mentioned, His hold-up play isn't there because he doesn't try to hold the ball up anymore. He always tries a flick, and the majority of them fail. He's pretty bad at holding on to possession for that reason. He doesn't get involved in other aspects of build-up play. He's not like a Harry Kane where he drops deep, he will get the ball, and then he will spray it wide to a winger. It's either to him for a flick on in the air, and sometimes it's a helpless situation. I appreciate that we use him as an out ball when maybe we shouldn't. But when he does that, and if he doesn't lose the ball and he does manage to get the ball wide to a midfielder, to a wing or whatever, he's often then 10 yards behind the player when we've moved forward with the ball. It's not where he should be to finish off the chance that he helped create. That's a symptom of age, definitely. But I don't think he's really adapted that well, the way that he plays, in the same way we saw Ibra do, you know? For that reason, you consider he has one open play goal this season. For that reason, you start to question what he actually offers at all. Like, what, you know, if he was good at holding the ball up, but his goal numbers weren't so great, you could say he's facilitating the play of the wingers. But he doesn't. He loses possession a lot. If he was getting in the area for chances and he was a pure finisher, fair enough. You know, Immobile, other players have made a career out of just being penalty box strikers, as Shrewd has before. But he doesn't. He's got one open play goal this season, the rest are penalties. There's just nothing there anymore. There's nothing that I can see. And I'm not really a believer that if we manage his workload this season, all of a sudden he's going to be a Duracell bunny full of energy for one game a week. I don't think he'll ever be that again. Was he ever that, though? Probably not. He's never been really, really mobile. He's never been particularly fast, but he was a lot better movement-wise. I think he's struggling still with his Achilles, and he's probably got an ankle problem on top of that. I'll cut him a bit of slack because he was massively overworked last season. But if you just write down what you see every time the ball goes near Giroud during the game, the majority of it's bad. And that's why I hope Okafor can offer us something different. He isn't going to be the same physical presence. He's not going to occupy two centre-backs at once, you know, because they're worried about crosses and whatnot. But I think he might give us something different. He might pull defenders all over with his movement. He might swap positions with Leao at times. He might free pockets of space that the wingers or midfielders can move up into. Stuff that having a static number nine like Giroud doesn't do. We said at times during the last two seasons that we played better football with Rebic up front. He's not a natural centre forward. He was just making do with what he had, the skills that he had. And I think we look more fluid for it. So I'm really hopeful that Okafor does well. And I think Jovic could be a nice go-between once he gets fitness, because he is a battler. He is a nasty little bastard when he gets going. So I hope we can get him back to 100% soon and contributing. Hassan Abu Jiri asks, or Jeju, sorry, asks, gents, is it too early to look to the January transfer market? Who would you get? He suggests a solid striker, a defensive midfielder, and or a centre back. I'll give you a bit of guidance on this as well. There was a few reports saying we'd agreed 18 million fee for Mediterranean. That deal didn't end up happening. We signed Jovic on free. So in theory, we've got the budget to go out and make an 18, 20 mil signing in January. Who could we bring in for that
We were linked with Miranda, I think it was.
Yeah, Real Betis.
So, I mean, I do think we're obviously looking internally already. We're making that thing. But as far as fans, it might be a little early just because I don't know. It's only been five games, right? Like, I don't know what we're lacking yet besides the obvious, which is another defensive mid and a striker. And I don't know necessarily if it's worth spending a, you know, nerfed or depleted budget in January instead of going all out in the summer. Because the reason we didn't get a top-level striker this summer is because we had so many other departments we had to at least get above, you know, drowning level. And we did that. And then that obviously leaves you with a much smaller purse left to go for someone. And that's why we were linked so heavily with a 30-year-old Cheremi, because we could get him for a low price and he could bring in goals. But ideally, you want to spend a lot of money on a young striker who also gets you a lot of goals and can play for the future for the next 4 or 5 years. I don't see that happening in January unless we pull off some cheeky bullshit for like Jonathan David. That seems to be the name that continues to get thrown around. But I would much rather us wait for the summer to do striker. And in January, it's even hard to think defensive mid because we'll have Benacer back in February. Right. So it's like, do we even need that? I would actually turn my attention to a new, and I might catch some heat for this, but a new starting right back and maybe another center back to replace Kjær, who is obviously still performing, but on his way out.
I would have to replace center back for sure. Also, I don't know if I give Pioli the reins to pick out a striker because I don't think Pioli is going to be here for that much longer. Also, we have not, like, besides the Inter game and I guess Newcastle, like, we've played well every game, right? So, like, I don't know what, like, why there's, like, a freak out about needing a new striker. Whether you want to, like, Drew's on 5 goals. Whether four of them, three PKs and one open play?
Yeah.
I thought it was five. Four PKs and one open, you know, four goals. Pulisic and Chukwueze and Liao on the wings have been huge. Like, let's see where we are at the end of the season because this is a different team than last year. We're not just playing through Liao. So, like, you know, a lot can happen. Good.
And Okafor is only 22. He could become the starting striker still, you know.
I kind of thought like that's why we bought him, but I guess it's kind of to back up Liao as well. So
this could be, you know, the project season for Okafor. You know, we give him a season to kind of grow in the shadows and then say, well, you've done enough. Here's the reins. Or what's interesting is in his last season at Salzburg, he played in a front two off Benjamin Sesko, who is a player that we've actually been linked with in the last week or so. He moved to Leipzig last summer. The rumor is that we tried to intercept that deal and got no dice on it. But who knows? If we go back in, we know Leipzig are a club willing to sell. The other name that was mentioned was Roko Simic, who plays at Salzburg. And he's definitely more of one for the future. He's a lot younger and he doesn't quite have the same goal scoring record, but he's still a talent without a doubt. And then obviously you've got Jonathan David, who's mentioned. And one of the other ones that came up recently, albeit from a less reliable source, was Santiago Jimenez, who's at Feyenoord. He banged him in last season. And just reading a tweet now saying that Jovic is not travelling with the squad for the game against Cagliari because he is still doing individual training. He did say in his first press conference last week that he needs a bit more time because I guess he was kind of shunned in pre-season. We knew Fiorentina wanted rid of him. But yeah, Jovic, he's another name that you can throw into the future centre-forward picture without any great deal of certainty. He might be until the end of the season maximum. We don't know just yet. But yeah, on the January thing, it's really hard to get good value in January. It's the middle of the season. Teams are all fighting for their respective objectives, if not their mid-table. Do we want to be signing players from mid-table teams? Probably not. And I think it's going to be really hard to get good value for a striker. I think it's going to be difficult as well to sign a centre-back who can come in and make an immediate difference. But if I had to pick, that's probably where my money would go. I think without Kalulu, who there's still debate about what his best position is, we've shown how thin on the ground we are in that position. And Kjær cannot be trusted to contribute at that level anymore. Not only because he struggles physically, but I think we saw in that Derby game as well, it throws everyone else off having him there. He's made an amazing contribution, to be honest, since he arrived. He's been a big part of our resurgence, but that's probably the one area where I'd say we could do with a little bit of bolstering. But it is tough to get value in January. Final question comes from Milan for Life 3. With Krunic being out, do you think Victor Aletu should get a chance in the first team? Not necessarily start, but be on the bench. He seems like the most ready Primavera player.
No. I mean, he might get called up to the bench. I just don't see him playing even off the bench. You know, I think Adley's supposedly going to start. That's what Vitiello's latest tweet just said. And then it'll probably be Musa after that in the pecking order. So I just, plus Pioli wants to play Reinders there for whatever reason. So I think we already have the depth there, even if it isn't ideal. We already have the personnel for the spot. I just don't see Utu getting called up for that. Or maybe he gets called up to be a body on the roster, but he won't be playing.
I agree with what AJ said.
Yeah, I like Iletu a lot. I think he's definitely one of the most ready from a physical point of view. As mentioned, later this week, we're going to do a bit of a breakdown of the Primavera, like the players to look out for and why they've started so well under Abate this season. But yeah, I think Pioli likes Iletu as well because there was mid-season friendlies during the World Cup break where he called him up and I think he got a goal and an assist against... I can't remember who it was, but it was a team we were 2-1 down to and we came back late on to win 3-2. And Iletu was quite simply the best player on the pitch. Like when he came on, he looked... And people have made this comparison with Kessie because of the way that he plays. Like he can play either as a box-to-box player or deeper in midfield. He's physical. He protects the ball well. And I see that he's a lot more dynamic and he's a lot better on the ball though than Kessie. Obviously, in relative terms, like when you shift that upwards to senior football, he probably need a lot of time to adapt. But I think we know Pioli by now. He's going to stick with his older, more experienced heads. It's a big ask to throw someone in there in front of the back four who is so young. But definitely a name to keep following. And I really hope he's one of the ones that makes the jump to the first team. Because if he keeps going on this trajectory and with his skill set, then we've got a really, really special player there. And that applies to quite a few of them as well. I mean, I'm sure you've all seen Commander's exploits and stuff. I'm sorry, I'm going to ask one more because we got it a few times. Mike Maignan repeatedly getting injured. This one, thankfully, not as severe. Do we start thinking about whether A, we should give him a massive pay rise to keep him and renew his deal, and B, even think about selling him and replacing him? Tough one, isn't it?
I think you need to get a backup that is closer to his level. Sportiello has been great, but is he capable of a full season? You know, worst case scenario, maybe. We know Tatu Ushani was not. We know Morante is not. So I would still give Maignan more continuation because ultimately he is probably a top five goalkeeper in the world. And if he's healthy, he's going to perform like one. So
do you give him the contract?
That's
like the tough part right now. Because renegotiations are starting. He wants 8 to 10, but it's like, do you pay an injury prone?
I would offer him like 6.5 plus bonuses. Yeah, like what Martino just said, incentivize it.
Because people can see that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Martino's here. He's just not on camera. but yeah, so I would give him bonuses that get up to 9. You know, I wouldn't go the full 10. So look, a big part of it would be just appearance based, honestly, because we know right. The performance will be there. But make it clean sheet and appearance based. And then if you hit those appearances, then we're good to go. And maybe we make it, you know, permanent after hitting those appearances 2 years in a row or something. I don't know. There's ways you can finagle it. Contracts can be whatever you want them to be. So.
If he agrees to that, there's so many different strings at play here, right? Like he just might want it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. The concerns that we have are concerns that will be replicated in any interested team. You know, if it's true Chelsea and Man United knocked on the door last summer, they'll have had an eye on his two injuries that he's had since he's been with us. They might think, well, his injury looks got to get better from here. But any interested team might look at his, another injury, another muscle problem and think, maybe we can't, maybe we're not going to offer him that guaranteed 8-10 mil. And maybe Mike is also wise enough to realise.
Yeah, he's not down.
Yeah. Martino saying here, Maignan overrated, would sell him and sign Onana as his replacement. So that's his opinion on the matter. Yeah, we'll wrap it up there, boys. he didn't really say that.
He didn't say that.
That's funny, though. Thank you very much to everybody who made it this far. Acknowledge that it's action-packed. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. 4 games per episode we're kind of covering here. I think we're going to have a bit of a rotating cast for the next couple of weeks. AJ's out next week. I go to Chicago in a couple of weeks. So
I'll actually be back next week. I was wrong. The week after I'll be gone. Yeah.
So yeah, it's only me the week after.
So it's just going to be Maddie rambling to himself about a game he didn't watch.
I'll just bring in Martino.
Talk shit. Martino, yeah. Isaac, and Maddie. The true 18.
Fred DeLondo. The true 18.
Fred won't even know he got called up.
That was a funny one, man. Thank you.
He used to join the podcast like 10 years ago.
He had one. I think he had one appearance.
No, he came a couple times that season.
Maybe he did. That was when I was recording kitchen at my mom and dad's house. How times change. And now I'm in a box flat in North.
So now you're in the kitchen in your own house.
Thank you, everybody, who listened to the entirety of this episode. Please drop us a comment with what your lineup would be for the next two games, how you'd rotate, any signings you'd make in January. Get involved, basically. Same goes with suggesting content, points of discussion, stuff for the Substack. Thank you to everybody who's a founding member and a subscriber to us on Substack. It really helps us further what we're doing. And I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. Cheers.
See you guys.
Maddie.
See you guys.
Martino. Take care, everyone. See you in a week's time.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio...